Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
US President Donald Trump has ordered his officials to release documents relating to three of the most high-profile assassinations in US history. The files, previously deemed top secret by both the CIA and the FBI, relate to the assassination of Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy, and his brother Robert F. Kennedy, for his reaction to the move and more. I'm joined by President Trump's former National Security Advisor, Ambassador John Bolton. John Bolton, you're very welcome.
Well, glad to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Can I ask you about the release of those files, those documents that were deemed top secret before now? How will that be received, do you think?
Well, I think people may be surprised at how little there really is that they think is going to be interesting. The reasons to withhold much of this information, certainly going back to the John F. Kennedy assassination, had to do with national security. Now it's almost 70 years, over 70 years since the 60 years since the assassination. So it's hard, I suppose, to imagine what could still be so secret. So I think there will be some embarrassment to the United States. It may reveal some sources and methods that have been suspected but never confirmed. But I think it will do absolutely nothing to satisfy those who say that Kennedy's assassination was a conspiracy of, name your choice of who you want it to be a conspiracy of, mm-hmm. as opposed to the act of Lee Harvey Oswald. The reports about the documents that have been released, the number that's used over and over again, is that 99% of all the documents about the assassination, that touch on the assassination, have already been released. So you're down to the last 1%. I think probably something similar is true in the case of the Robert F. Kennedy assassination, the Martin Luther King assassination.
So there's either little info left to be released, or else the most sensitive and secret information is that 1% of files. Do you think Robert Kennedy Jr., who's serving in President Trump's administration, had anything to do with the release?
I'm sure he did. My impression is the Kennedy family over time has as to both assassinations, has said basically they're content to leave this with the officials who review documents historically for declassification at some appropriate time, and that they didn't intend to interfere. Whether RFK Jr., obviously it's his father we're talking about here, had something to say, I don't know. There's an argument that says just release everything and maybe that'll shut the conspiracy theorists up. If I believe that were true, I'd have released this stuff 10 or 20 years ago. My bet is, you can check me on this when the files finally get out, that there will be absolutely nothing of interest to conspiracy theorists, and it won't quash the conspiracy theories.
Well, you could well be right, John, on that. The file on Martin Luther King's assassination is to be released as well, and he's reported to have been shot by white nationalist James Earl Ray. But members of the King family alleged that he didn't act alone, that there was a wider conspiracy. Again, is that something where release the files and the conspiracy theorists will still be there? Is that what you believe will happen?
Well, I'm certainly prepared to believe that in the years immediately after any of these assassinations, a lot of the people who were reviewing the files for classification purposes were part of the transaction itself, so that covering up any mistakes they have made could well be part of the motive, as opposed to legitimate issues of classification. But after 40 years or so, when none of those people are still in government, the idea of covering up embarrassing information about the government or something else all but disappears. Mm-hmm. And so it will be interesting, just for analytical purposes, to know what has been withheld all this period of time. But in terms of telling us anything new or different about any of these three cases, I'm willing to bet it's insignificant.
Okay. Can I ask you about something that we just heard in our news headlines there? And that's Donald Trump talking about his approach to ending or trying to end the war in the Ukraine because he singled out OPEC and he wants OPEC to cut oil prices and he thinks that will help end the war in Ukraine. Now, he's an unconventional president and we've seen the Trump effect already, many believe, in the Middle East, in Gaza. Could he work his magic, for want of a better word, John, in terms of Ukraine?
Well, the only magic that applied in the Middle East was putting pressure on Netanyahu so that Trump could say he caused the release of the hostages. Thinking back to Reagan and Carter in 1980 and 81, when the Iranians released the hostages from the American embassy they had taken prisoner. And Netanyahu had four more years of Trump to deal with, so he agreed to it. That's not magic. That's just pure pressure. The idea that a significant drop in oil prices would deprive Russia of oil revenue from the export of oil, I don't think would stand up because I think the Chinese would be there to support them. I think Trump just wants lower gasoline prices to help keep inflation down, which the tariffs, which he seems to be poised to announce, you never can tell until it happens, will have a significant upward increase on a lot of the prices of consumer goods that average Americans pay, something that should worry him.
Or is it that he's just simply giving Russia a fig, a reason to end the war or row back on the war extensively? I mean, could he operate in that way?
That would require him to think strategically, which he can't do.
Can I ask you as well? I mean, whatever word you use, magic or pressure, it certainly seems to have worked in the Middle East. But the question now, and we're reading about the next names and the tranche of hostages, the four hostages to be released by Hamas on Saturday, I think, under the Gaza ceasefire deal. That will happen, and then prisoners will be released. But will the deal hold, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's a bad deal. One of the ironies of this pressure that Trump put on is that he forced Netanyahu to accept a deal that Biden had been proposing for 7 months, which was a bad deal, I think, for Israel. And as with all these hostage ceasefires, gives Hamas a chance to regroup, rearm, and come back to cause more trouble. This is a moment when Israel should be focused on destroying Iran's nuclear weapons program, which is a proliferation threat for all of us. Mm-hmm. But Trump doesn't think in those terms. He wanted a big uptick on inauguration day, and he got it.
So sorry to cut across on you, but you would have advised Israel to keep going with the military operation, would you?
Absolutely. I think the objective of destroying Hamas politically and militarily is the only acceptable outcome. I think, as Franklin Roosevelt insisted for the United States in World War II against Germany and Japan, Israel should be seeking unconditional surrender.
But what about the 46,000 innocent lives that have been lost there?
Well, I don't think it's 46,000 innocent lives. A lot of people have looked at those statistics. I believe that as many as 20,000 of those were Hamas fighters, and that the statistics released by the so-called Gazan Ministry of Health are in substantial part propaganda.
Well, you're right. It may not be the full 46,000, and I take that back. But most commentators, the U.S. up to now, the U.N., many of the humanitarian organizations say the vast majority are innocent, and many of them innocent women and children. How can you really
I'd be happy to send you a list of articles and analyses, including some by U.S. military officials that cast doubt on the validity of those statistics. And it's even if they are civilians, if they're part of the Hamas terrorist organization, I think they're legitimate targets.
But if they're civilians, how can they be part of the Hamas military operation?
Because Hamas is a terrorist group, and everybody associated with it is associating with terrorism
of their own volition or not. Is that what you mean?
Well, because if the citizens of Gaza are opposed to Hamas, what are they doing about it?
Ah, come on, John. Come on. I mean, if you accept that they're a terrorist organization.
I know this. Yeah, I know this. The Jews in Warsaw, and I'm a Lutheran, just so we get that straight. The Jews in Warsaw rose against the Nazis in the last days of World War II. They had the courage to do it. If the Gaza residents really think Hamas is an evil force, why aren't they cooperating with Israel to help finish them off?
So you're saying the Gazan population, starving and displaced, on the brink of famine, many of them wounded, many of them traumatized, should rise up against Hamas while they're being bombed by Israel? Is that what you're saying?
Well, you know, if conditions are so bad, you'd wonder how many of the 47,000 people would say had died of starvation. The fact is, most of the food and aid that goes into Gaza has been taken over by Hamas, and ruthless, brutal cynics that they are, they've used it to keep themselves in power.
Can I ask you about what Trump proposes to do in Greenland? Because it's bemusing an awful lot of people, and it's irked an awful lot of people in Europe, many officials. What do you think his strategy is there?
Well, as I said before, he doesn't do strategy, and in fact, he's getting in his own way. There are very significant national security interests involved in Greenland. There have been for some time, dating back over 150 years for the United States. Today's interests include keeping the Russians and the Chinese away from Greenland's territorial waters, from exploiting its mineral resources. And there are a number of vehicles. I looked at this quite extensively back in 2019 to achieve that. Right now, the Arctic Ocean is circled by territory claimed by five countries, Russia, about half of it, and then the United States, Canada, Denmark, through Greenland, and Norway, NATO countries. That are critical that we maintain that security. So I think you have to take into account the legitimate interest of the Greenlandic people and their democratically elected government, the Danes and their democratically elected government. As usual, mm-hmm. Trump is making a mess of it. But don't forget, there are legitimate interests here that all NATO members, of which I know you're not a part, have a legitimate concern. And I'll just end with one historical fact. In 1867, William Seward, Secretary of State, bought Alaska from Russia. And in 1867, he had a treaty signed with Denmark to buy Greenland. Unfortunately, the Senate of the United States did not act on the treaty. But the thought of buying Greenland has existed for a very long time.
Okay. And I suppose the geopolitical situation is very different now than it was in the 1860s. Look, we'll talk again, I'm sure. John Bolton, thank you very much indeed for joining us.